welcome once again to another edition of what I call American Exposé. It's the 20th of October, 2005. I'm Chris Gerner. The website is increasing. The research section has gone from number 47 to number 58. 11 new entries. And listeners, keep in mind number 47, Federal Prison Industries. A extremely important website, and we're going to have to get Rose Lear on. I hope we can do that in the very near future. Our guest today will be, for the first hour, Dan Byfield from the American Land Foundation. He is having his problems, but he's going to give you the circumstances and the situations from someone that's a real landowner that is up against the situation that all of us will be affected very, very soon. As the progressive direction of Agenda 21 moves its tentacles throughout the country and the world. Now, under today's date, we have 33, Dennis, shame on you, 33 entries on news and information for today, October 20th. Fabulous information, people. Strongest hurricane on record roars toward Mexico and U.S., Chertoff says FEMA is ready for Wilma. Chertoff is the one that said he's going to close the borders, remember? As the borders have remained open for so long. Isn't that ironic? Full coverage on tropical storms and hurricanes. Job losses from hurricanes up to 478,000, according to the Associated Press. Is that just not amazing? Still no plan for housing Katrina evacuees out of Reuters. Once again, a steerable hurricane able to be steered out of harm's way can be done, according to many sources. So if they can be steered out of harm's way, why are they being steered in harm's way, if not to create the land islands that Joan Vion talks about in her book? We're 2025, we will all be on land islands, and we will not be able to leave those sustainable communities. So there's full coverage on tropical storms and hurricanes. And here we see full coverage of Hurricane Katrina. And then we deal with bird flu. Oh, boy. Another created scenario in my thoughts. They always play these games on us, in my opinion. Here we see bird flu kills Thai man. Fear grows in Europe. Bird flu going to East Africa. United Nations offers officials fear. They're offering fear, in my opinion. The U.N. officials, the U.N. system. What is the U.N. system, people? A global system to control mankind and to reduce the population. And certainly that's been going on for a long time. The spread of communism comes from the U.N. system. Communitarianism is alive and well in America today. Here we see threat to rare birds as avian flu spreads out of Reuters. EU moves to widen Russian ban after lethal bird flu outbreak. And how coincidental is this? So they're moving... This time, as they tried with mad cow, this time with bird flu, they're moving throughout the world on this one. So apparently this is a big push. This is going to be a big drive for vaccinations to get us sicker, more than likely. So there's full coverage on the bird flu, number 17. Vital information. Storms dump record rain in Las Vegas. National news. But Dennis, 33 entries today? Shame on you. Stick up a 34, why don't you? I'm only joking. We'll be back to continue with the broadcast and bring up Dan Byfield from the American Land Foundation. Vital information coming up. Stay with us. Called American Exposé. The website AmericanExposé.com is there for you. And we have Dan Byfield. Welcome to the broadcast, Dan.
Thank you, Chris. Nice to be here.
I appreciate your presence. The American Land Foundation, you formed this out of what reasoning?
In 1994, I worked for a, believe it or not, a bank called the Federal Land Bank. It's not a federal government program. It was actually a co-op for farmers and ranchers that loaned money to agriculture.
Uh-huh.
And they hired me to come in and do lobby work and environmental work because of their concern for environmental issues affecting property rights to the extent that it would affect the collateral of their bank. They loan money on private property, and the private property becomes entangled in the bureaucratic red tape maze of environmental regulatory issues like endangered species or wetlands that lowers its value, restricts its use, and then in turn harms their collateral. So they actually helped me create the American Land Foundation. I left 3 years after that, 1997, and went out on my own with help from them and became a membership organization that has been around ever since.
What's the group again?
American Land Foundation.
Mm-hmm. And the website is?
It's www.anland.us.
Uh-huh. So what is the situation going on regarding the area around Fort Hood?
We were called by some landowners several months ago, probably 6 months ago now, because the fort, it's an army base in central Texas, decided that it needed more land outside of the base and wanted basically to expand. And the reason they said they needed to expand was because of a problem that they've got inside the base, which every base practically in the nation has today. They have endangered golden cheek warblers and black cat vireos, two songbirds that the environmentalists claim they have terrific habitat in the middle of their fort that needed preserving. And so the Endangered Species Act has caused our Army to stop training inside the base and look outwards outside of the base for more land to mitigate or to find other land to basically control for habitat purposes so that they can go back to training inside the fort. So it's a whole political mess. It's a, there's other extenuating circumstances, but that's mainly it. It's the fort having to deal with the Department of Interior and endangered species inside the fort, causing them to not be able to train our soldiers on land that they already own, and forcing the issue to private land outside of the fort, around the fort.
Okay, so they want to expand Fort Hood.
Well, they now claim they don't want to do that. They're using environmental organizations and new terminology and programs that are being used all around the country and saying all they wanted was a buffer zone around the fort to the tune of about 200,000 acres. It'd go out 6.2 miles in all radius circle around the fort, which, you know, would encompass all private property around the fort, and wanting to basically force landowners into agreements to where they could manage the land in a way that preserved the endangered species, which in turn would free up their land inside the fort so they could go back to training and not worrying about protecting and preserving endangered species.
What's that website again?
Our website?
Yes.
It's www.amland.us.
Okay. I want to make sure everybody gets that. Amland.us. Make sure I have it as well. This situation with endangered species is a business, isn't it?
Yeah, it's big business. Has been for years, and it's actually just, I think, exponentially grown in the last 4 to 5 years with funding that has been appropriated out of Congress and environmental organizations that are just huge worldwide that are really pushing this whole agenda on us and everybody.
Why do you think they're doing this?
It is, in my opinion, is just to control land use. It's to control. It's a lot of its power, a lot of its greed, but mainly it's land use control. And most of the control will rest with the federal government. And, you know, one of the things that a good friend of mine always says is that, you know, if you control control the land, you control the natural resources, and you control the wealth. And a lot of this, I think, deals with collateralizing debt, national debt. It's controlling natural resources. It's, you know, who is going to get to develop in the future? Who's going to own the land to develop it in the future? And, you know, there's, I don't believe in conspiracies everywhere, but I think this is a, there is a, an agenda here that is taking private property out of the hands of private owners and transferring it over to either government or land trusts that are huge, and they're in the real estate business.
In other words, non-governmental organizations.
NGOs, right.
Mm-hmm. How are you directly impacted by this direction?
Well, several things. One, my wife, whose father is Wayne Hage, is her family has been fighting this fight in Nevada for 14 years in claims court, where the Bureau of Land Management has literally run them out of business and confiscated their cattle and all of that. That's a whole other story. But me personally, I've just been fighting this fight for landowners for almost 20 years now in Texas and all over the country through our organization. And we own land, and I want to make sure that I don't end up having an endangered species or a wetland or something on my property, because I know what happens to people when it does.
And what happens to people when it does?
Well, you end up being told by a federal agency, normally U.S. Fish and Wildlife or Corps of Engineers or Bureau of Land Management or one of those land use agencies, what you can and cannot do on your property, and then they require you to apply to them for a permit. You know, it's either through the Clean Water Act or the Endangered Species Act. And those are just bureaucratic nightmares that, unfortunately, landowners get thrown into an administrative whirlwind, if you will, that you never can get out of. Every time they demand something of you and you try to abide by it or apply it, they always come up with one more thing that you need to do. So there literally are people that have been in the process for, well, one person in particular I could tell you who was a plaintiff that we filed a lawsuit on behalf of. He, for 17 years, has tried to get a permit from U.S. Fish and Wildlife on his property that they have never granted, 17 years, and he has gone through bankruptcy. He's been foreclosed on. We filed a lawsuit on his behalf. It took almost 5 years. We got to the Supreme Court and got denied just this summer by the Supreme Court, all over six microscopic bugs that live in caves on his property that they claim were so vital to the web of life that they will not let him develop or use his land. And so he's basically lost it all.
What did he want to do to his land in order to bring the ire of the environmentalists upon him?
He, believe it or not, his land is located at an intersection right outside of Austin, Texas, that is one of the fastest growing areas in the nation, right out west of Austin in the Hill Country. It's a beautiful country, and it's two major highways where they intersect. He bought 226 acres 17 years ago. Being, you know, as a speculator, as anybody who is a smart business person knows that, you know, if you can buy land and for future development, then that's a great asset and a great investment. That's literally all he bought it for. Well, it turns out that this part of the state is very liberal, and we started fighting endangered species issues several years ago, and he wound up finding out through somebody from Earth First that trespassed on his property that they claimed that he had endangered cave bugs, that they went to U.S. Fish and Wildlife and requested that they be listed as endangered, and he had no say about it, the landowner did. And they got listed, and he then fell under this regulatory nightmare of the federal government through the Endangered Species Act.
Well, isn't that just amazing? As we're being compared to bugs now.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, Chris, the Supreme Court held our case for an entire year and would not let us know if they were going to even hear our case. They denied it. And by denying it, they basically just said, they didn't write this down, but they said, K-bugs and bugs are more important, have more rights than the humans that own the land. And that's exactly what our Supreme Court of this land just said.
There you have it, listeners. The setup situation, the setup scenario to keep you from doing whatever you want to do on your land. It's not your land, is it, Dan?
No, it is. It isn't. If somebody somewhere decides that they want to control your land, it can just easily be done today. And it's a scam. It's a farce.
We'll be back to continue with Dan Byfield. He'll be with us until 10 minutes before the conclusion of this first hour. And vital information, people, the website is AmLand, www.amland.us. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Okay, welcome back to the broadcast. Dan Byfield is our guest. The American Land Rights Foundation.
American Land Foundation.
American Land Foundation, I apologize. You got a group of farmers together to fight this battle around Fort Hood, did you?
Yeah, they actually called me because some of them were our members and wanted to know what they could do. And it really started out by them asking me, what is a conservation easement? And that set off all kinds of alarm bells to me, and so I went and met with them. And what turns out is that this buffer zone around the fort, the Nature Conservancy, which is a non-governmental organization, huge, probably the largest environmental organization in the world, had signed an agreement with the Army, the Department of Defense, to start creating buffers all around the country. And it just so happened that these members around the Fort Hood knew me, and so they called me to ask me about it. And the Nature Conservancy did a survey to landowners all around the fort asking them various questions, and it started raising a lot of concerns from the landowners. Why are these questions being asked? And one thing led to another. And it turns out they wanted to create this buffer zone around the fort, and they wanted to use a tool in their chest of tools called a conservation easement. Today, because those landowners all banded together and formed a group called Our Land, Our Lives, they're now backing down from that, the Army is, and Nature Conservancy, they claim, will have nothing to do with any of their business in the future, and people are waking up realizing that, you know, why should I put a conservation easement on my land? That's really something we probably ought to talk about, what that is.
What does a conservation easement do?
Conservation easement is a contract that is graced by the IRS that is placed on your property, and it's really a misnomer, Chris. It's not an easement at all. It's like a restrictive type agreement that the landowner supposedly voluntarily agrees to do, but once you do this, it's in perpetuity. It can never be taken off your land. It doesn't matter who owns it or who, if your grandchildren want to do something with your land, if it's not in the agreement that you sign in that conservation easement, it can never be done to that property. But it is a perpetual agreement that restricts certain management techniques on the property for conservation purposes, for open use, for some environmental purpose, that then you send it to the IRS. The IRS says, yes, that's a use of a conservation easement. We'll allow it. And because of that, it restricts the use, it lowers the value, and it lowers the taxable value of it, and you get a tax break or a benefit out of it as well. So you can get a payment up front to sign the contract from an NGO or a government entity, and it has to be with either one of those two, a government entity or a non-governmental organization. Those are the only two entities that can grant conservation easement. It has to be in perpetuity, has to be for one of four specific reasons, mainly being either open space or some sort of environmental purpose. And then the IRS graces it and says, okay, that qualifies. And you then are stuck with a management plan that is cast upon your land. You are the subservient owner of your property because the NGO or the government entity becomes the dominant owner because they manage it and they control the use of it. They can tell you what you can and can't do. And you literally have to abide by that. If you don't, they can enforce it. They go to a court, get an injunction against you. And you can't ever change it.
So it makes you a prisoner on your own land.
Well, it makes you a serf. As the Jim Burling with Pacific Legal Foundation literally calls it serfship. It is literally you become a serf on your own property where you have the king, whoever it is, managing the land, calling all the shots. And so these people around the fort were told that they were going to be offered conservation easements. Once they realized what a conservation easement was, there wasn't any landowner in their right mind that would want to even get involved in those. Now, there are people that do. There are people that are that don't necessarily want to keep the land in their family, and they don't mind it not being developed in the future, or for whatever reason they don't want it to change. And most landowners don't want their land to ever change, but they don't want to take away the right of their children if their children want to do it. That's their children's prerogative, right?
Right.
But there are landowners who don't have that kind of investment in their land, and they're willing to take the money up front and tie their land up in perpetuity. And, you know, they think that they're helping the environmental cause when, in fact, what they're doing is just part of a bigger agenda to set more land aside and direct development wherever says they want it to go.
Vital information from Dan Byfield, listeners, from the American Land Foundation. We'll continue on the other side. He'll be with us for another 20 minutes. Oh, man. We'll be back to continue with this one. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Listeners, we have Dan Byfield with us. His website is amland.us. That's AMLAND.US. Dan, once a property owner signs a conservation easement, are his property taxes lowered as a result of that?
Supposedly that's one of the enticements that they use to entice landowners to sign one. And the reason it does is because that they place a management plan over that piece of property, and they'll come out. They have to do what's called a baseline study, where they come out and they inventory everything on your land, every plant, every tree, every waterway, whatever it is on your property, and they do probably aerial photographs, whatever they want to do, and that is what's called the baseline. Once you have that baseline established, anything you want to do to alter it has to be approved through the manager of your land. And so that restricts the use, and that is the whole purpose of a conservation easement, is to lower the value. Now, let me tell you another secret about a conservation easement. If what everybody has always said is, look, if you want my land, come out and you can buy it, you can condemn me and buy it or whatever, but don't regulate me to death, because if you regulate me, it's going to reduce the value of my property, and that's a whole other story. But so what they do with the conservation easement is, by restricting its use and lowering its value, they then they're able to offer you less for the easement than they would if they had to come out and buy your land at fair market value. Because they literally have restricted its use, they've lowered its value, so they therefore offer you a third for your land. But their argument is, but you get to stay here and you get to live here. Yeah, you get to live here, you get to pay taxes on it, but you can only do what they say you can do.
Well, you're making payments on the land usually as well.
Right, that's exactly right. And that, you know, that's a whole issue I've raised with the bank, making sure that if a landowner does this, that their loans are protected. And it does. It changes the whole collateral issue. It changes a whole bunch of other things. What about the tax base to the local economy, to the county? If you're lowering the taxes on your property, the county's taking in less money.
Yeah, good point. Now, okay, what if someone signs a conservation easement and they want to put, you know, one of these little storage sheds you buy at these, you know, the various big chain outlets that you go to,
right.
Lowe's or Home Depot. You know, you get one of these 8x15-foot storage container storage buildings that you want to build on your property. Is that restricted?
Yes, it is. You either have to negotiate that prior to you signing it, or you have to have a clause in there that allows you to do that. Otherwise, you have to request permission from those who are managing it, whether or not you can have something like that on the property. More than likely, they'll say no, that is not consistent with the purpose of the conservation easement, which is the catch-all phrase that's in almost every conservation easement, which if it isn't consistent with the purposes of the conservation easement, they can deny it.
Is there anything that anyone can do on their property when they sign a conservation easement that isn't going to be scrutinized?
No, not really. I mean, that's the whole purpose of a conservation easement, is to make sure that you manage the land consistent with the purposes of the easement. And the purposes of the easement may change year to year. You never know, because let's say today what is an acceptable management technique of, say, grazing cattle on your property this year, 5 years from now, some environmental organization may come along and say they're spoiling the river with runoff, therefore there's too many cattle out here. This management plan, a third party can literally come in and enforce the manager of that plan to either alter the plan or enforce it or whatever, so they can come in, file a lawsuit, and go take you to court saying that you need to change the management plan of this and reduce the cattle on your property or fence them off or move them back from the water. They can do whatever they want.
When they take you to court, isn't it very expensive to go to court?
Well, of course it is. But they don't mind. I mean, they are normally a very wealthy environmental organization, and you're a landowner just kind of struggling to make ends meet.
Uh-huh.
And they know they've got you over
a barrel.
A barrel.
And what if you wanted to build a garden on your property? Are they going to object to that?
It depends, I would say. They don't allow you to cut trees. You can if you want to burn them, you know, for fuel, but you can't harvest without their permission. You can't plant plants that are invasive, what they consider invasive species, whatever that may be.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it literally, you have literally given up all management aspects of your property. Unless you negotiate, unless you're smart enough to know that you should, you know, negotiate some of these things up front. That's what we're trying to educate people to do, that look, I'm not trying to stop anybody from doing these, Chris. If they want to do them, they can do them.
Uh-huh.
But there are specific things they need to know that they're giving up. And if they can actually negotiate it into prior to giving all these other rights up, that they need to do that. But if they don't, then they need to be aware that they've just given up all these rights.
Now, once a conservation easement is signed, is that forever?
Yes, it the IRS code requires that it be in perpetuity. And there, in real estate law, I don't know if anybody knows this, but in real estate law, you cannot tie the hands of future generations. In other words, if you put a deed restriction on it, it can only last so many years before it vests and ends. In other words, like say the youngest child is 21 years past their death is about the last, the longest anything can stay as a restriction on a piece of property, on real estate. The only thing that doesn't apply to that law as a conservation easement, the environmental organizations, the NGOs, went to the federal government and got those exempted from the rule against perpetuity. And so you can put one of these on, it doesn't, it isn't anything that's illegal anymore, and it is there for coverage.
I see. Now, on October 28th, there's a conference.
Yes.
In Reno, Nevada?
Yes.
Can you explain that to the listeners?
Well, that is actually my wife's organization, Stewards of the Range, and she is having a property rights conference in Reno, and there's going to be some great speakers. There's R.J. Smith out of Washington. There would be Jim Burling from Pacific Legal. There's terrific attorneys that are coming in to speak. Wayne and Helen Page will be there speaking.
Helen was the one that was fighting in Congress, correct?
Yes, she was actually a congressperson. During the revolution in 1994, she went in and she served three terms, and she term-limited herself after 6 years and left.
And was she fed up by the time she left?
You might have to ask her that, but I think that she regrets sometimes not staying, only because she wishes that there are some other things that she could have accomplished, but she set a goal and she stuck with it, and I admire her for it.
Yeah, and apparently no one replaced her to do the right thing for our country.
No, there is hardly anybody left, I think, in Washington that is doing the Lord's work as far as protecting, preserving our property rights in our nation.
Now, there's an Endangered Species Act bill. Is it H.R. 3824?
Yeah, that Congressman Pombo, Richard Pombo out of California, filed, and we actually formed a group called Property Rights First. It was a coalition of about 80 organizations nationwide. That his original bill was horrible. It had a 50% trigger for compensation. If government takes your property, they can take 49% of it. You don't have a cause of action, but if they take 50%, you do. You know, totally subjective clause that he had in there, trigger mechanism, and then also he decided to throw in invasive species where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service would become the regulator of invasive species. And invasive species is everything from cattle we imported from Europe to grass, Bermuda grass that, you know, we brought in from someplace else. It was a horrible bill, and we fought it, and he backed off of that and then reintroduced 3824, which, you know, we never supported it, but we made sure that it was as good a bill as we could get. And there are some good aspects to that bill, but I doubt that there's going to be anything in the Senate that is anything comparable to what Mr. Pombo came up with now.
So this is all designed to restrict your use of your property, and in the meantime, if the government wants to take your property, such as the situation around Fort Hood, there's a big battle in place that's going to cost a lot of money to the landowner.
Oh, sure. I mean, how do you fight the government, first of all? I mean, they've got all of your resources at their fingertips, and if they want your land, they're going to figure out a way to do it. It's just that when, you know, like those landowners up there, they've all banded together, and when every landowner practically bands together, what can they do? I mean, that's our point, is that it's a good story to tell because individuals have finally said enough is enough, and they've all banded together and stood up and said no, and it's got their attention. It's got everybody scrambling up there to figure out, okay, where do we go now? How do we implement our plan without it looking like we're implementing our plan? And the more you shine the light on it, the more the cockroaches seem to scatter, and it's pretty amazing stuff when you see the individual finally standing up and saying no. It's a miraculous thing.
See, this is the point of bringing you on, that here you have made a stand, and it's paying off because of your surrounding property owner friends are aware now, right?
Yeah, it's true. And Chris, I'll be real honest. I am totally vilified, even with some of my friends in agriculture, that they've gone hook, line, and sinker for this, to the political wills that, you know, this is the direction politicians want this to go, and this is what they figured out they were going to do to implement a federal law that is horrible and takes away people's rights. And there are just a few of us that have stood up and said no, and then. It's such a wonderful feeling to realize that there are other people that have heard you and agree with you, and you turn around, you stand up, you know, you turn around, they're standing back there behind you. It's wonderful, and these people have stood up and have really exposed it. And I'll be honest, I'm thinking of taking this particular issue and going nationwide with it to other states where other forts are doing the same thing and saying, look, in Texas, we said, to heck with this. This isn't right. It stood up, and a lot of people don't think they can fight the government or fight the army, but you can.
Well, that's vital at this point, vital. Now, the reasoning, once again, that Fort Hood had to expand is the fact that there's an endangered species on the present property of Fort Hood. Is that correct?
Yes, that is the whole crux of everything goes right back to the Federal Endangered Species Act law itself. And there are unscrupulous groups, environmental groups, that are using that to their benefit to implement a much bigger agenda to tie up more land and put it into government control using conservation easements, using habitat conservation plans, using whatever it is. They're using the Endangered Species Act as their whole means to get to their end.
Do you have any idea how many endangered species there are?
Yeah, in fact, sure. Yeah, there's over. There's a program we put together I told you about earlier called Taking Liberty, and that's at www.takingliberty.us. And you go to that, and we have maps, and there's one map on endangered species, and there's over 1,200, almost 1,300 listed endangered species. And there is a map, Chris, on there that. You take, I think it's 56 of those 1,200 species, and nearly every county in the United States is colored in on that map. So all you have to do is claim that 56 species out of those 1,200 are critical and they need some sort of protection, and you have total federal control of any piece of property in the United States.
Wow.
That's a very graphic map when you realize they have the means right now to do what they want to do. They're just now getting the appropriations and the money to do a lot of it. But, you know, a lot of people are starting to wake up and realizing, you know, this isn't about protecting species. This is about taking my land.
There you have it.
That's what these guys are around the fort are finally standing up and saying. We're not going to let you take our land.
And so where does this stand right now? As we just have a couple more minutes, as you have to go. Where does this stand right now?
Right now, they had a meeting last night that apparently was a very contentious meeting, and the Army and the people that are pushing this have decided that conservation easements aren't the direction they're going, but what they're doing now is they're calling them areas of interest, and it's the same, you know, same pig just dressed in different clothes. So all we're going to do is keep shining the light, and we've got a meeting next Tuesday night for landowners that we're going to educate and advise, and hopefully they'll all stand up and just say enough is enough.
Well, Dan, I sure appreciate your time, and I know you have to rush off. We will do this very much so in the future some more. Let's
Great.
Do this. And keep in mind that if ever there's an update you need to bring on to the presence of us, be sure to do this.
Great. I'll gladly do it. I appreciate knowing that you're there and all you're doing.
Thank you. My privilege to have you on today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Dan. Dan Byfield, listeners, the website is amland.us. vital information, people. Once again, here we are with this Agenda 21 deal, and it's moving with these conservation easements. I just received a mailing about empowerment zones in Oklahoma. So you have these situations being created at us and on us on a daily basis in Washington, D.C., the federal system, to control our land. And no one is immune from this. Ultimately, with these directions that I've talked about off and on, here we have, sometimes you become very, very speechless with all these various directions that come into place. And right now, I'm speechless because here we are with the taking of your land under the guise of conservation easements, comparing us to a bug, making us equal to a frog, making us equal to an amoeba. And this is all under the guise of environmentalism, listeners. The backdoor direction to enslave America and take your land. We'll be back. Talk about H.R. 3824. Welcome back to the broadcast, listeners. Today I monitor MSNBC. The bird flu virus is going rampant in Russia, according to MSNBC. Go to flu.msnbc.com to learn more about that. That's flu.msnbc.com. Here we see a bill to amend and reauthorize the Endangered Species Act of 1973 to provide greater results conserving and recovering listed species. And for other purposes. There must be at least 75 sponsors to this bill. It's a monster. Once again, another one we don't know about and haven't been covering, H.R. 3824. How remarkable is this? No, not too remarkable at all. Amendment references, they talk about except as otherwise expressly provided. Whenever in this act, an amendment or repeal is expressed in terms of an amendment to or repeal of a section or other provision, the reference shall be considered to be made to such section or other provision of the Endangered Species Act of 1973. 16 U.S. Code 1531. I see, said the blind man to his deaf dog. If the Secretary determines the data for a decision or action do not comply with the criteria established by the regulations issued under subparagraph B, do not comply with guidance issued under Section 515 of the Treasury and General Government Appropriations Act 2001, that's Public Law 101-554, by the Director of the Office of Management and Budget and the Secretary, do not consist of any empirical data or are found in sources that have not been subject to peer review in a generally acceptable manner. Oh, yes. The Secretary shall undertake the necessary measures to assure compliance with such criteria or guidance to, and blah, 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 blah. This is a big one. You have Section 4, Determination of Endangered Species and Threatened Species, and there's many provisions and changing of provisions. Determination of Endangered Species and Threatened Species, the Secretary shall, by regulation promulgated in accordance with subsection B, determine whether any species is an endangered species or a threatened species because of any of the following factors. A, the present or threatened destruction, modification, or curtailment of its habitat or range by human activities, competition from other species, drought, fire, or other catastrophic natural causes. Catastrophic natural causes, I see. There's such a thing called drought inducement, listeners. Overutilization for commercial, recreational, scientific, or educational purposes. Isn't that amazing? The inadequacy of existing regulatory mechanisms, including any efforts identified pursuant to subsection B1, other natural or man-made factors affecting its continued existence, the Secretary shall use the authority provided by paragraph 1 to determine any distinct population of any species of vertebrate fish or wildlife to be an endangered species or a threatened species only sparingly. I see. It's a monster. It's H.R. 3824, listeners. Modification of the Endangered Species Act. The Endangered Species Act, listeners. Who's the endangered species today, listeners? We'll be back for the second hour of American Exposé. Stay with me.